The Yankees' problems are far from solved, and the Knickerbockers just continue to show a remarkable amount of consistency, but there are aspects of them that particularly stand out. We talk about it all over the next few hours at 800-919-3776. We begin with some baseball. You can tweet the show at Chris Carlin. By all means, hit us up there. Instagram, it's that guy Carlin. So the Yankees have won 4 of 5, and everybody assumes that we're good to go. I would really just urge you to back off of that a little bit, just as many people would tell you not to get too worked up by what transpired over the first 15 games. The truth is, what we have seen overall from the Yankees this season is exactly what they're going to be. I'm not saying a 500 team, because they play too many bad teams to be a 500 team, but I'm saying one that is going to be up and down all year long, and the streaks are going to come and play a big role in 2021. Now, look, they've won 4 of 5. They have been a little bit more clutch. Their starting pitching has been a little bit better. Not good enough for me yet as to start lauding it, but certainly to recognize that they are at least giving them more of a chance right now. But the truth of the matter is, the Yankees' bullpen has been out of this world awesome in every single way. I mean, they lead Major League Baseball in basically every bullpen stat. ERA, WHIP, teams are hitting just 174 against them. It has been just remarkable how this bullpen has really kept them afloat in some ways, because right now, entirely too much is being asked of them. You know, the Yankees right now are averaging 4 2/3 innings per start. And you might say that Jordan Montgomery's done a decent job. He has. He's given them some length here and there. If we're going to call 5 and 6 innings length, at least 6 is. You saw Kluber a little bit better the other day, but still couldn't get through 5 and still threw 91 pitches in 5 innings. You see Jameson Taillon a little bit better. Overall, you see things. Domingo Germán the other day, after a shaky first inning, does a great job. I thought that in particular was a great job to get through 6 innings after giving up 3 runs early and really settling back. But you're asking so much of your pen right now. The Yankees, in averaging 4 2/3 innings per start, that includes Gerrit Cole. If you were to take Gerrit Cole out of that mix, they are barely averaging 4 per start. And that's absurd. That's absolutely absurd. You cannot continue to ask your bullpen to do this kind of work and expect to win. Well, what about last year's Rays? Fat boy, what do you got? Here's what I got. The majority of the people that evaluate teams believe that the Rays from this past year, if they continued to ask their bullpen to do as much work as they were doing through 60 games, would have seen a dramatic drop-off. And do you think that it's any kind of a coincidence that we've seen the Rays bullpen be as injured as they are this year, considering how much was asked of them last season? I don't think that's at all any kind of coinky-dink right now. You can look at whatever you want to over the last few days and feel like things are getting better and the Yankees are getting back to being the Yankees. And here we go. And you very well may be right over the next 8 games, because they've got a chance to build back up. Guess why? They're playing the Orioles. They're playing the Tigers. This is what they do. They're not a good team against good teams. They're a great team against bad teams. You know what that makes them? Bullies. And that's not good. There's not a consistency factor. There's a bully factor that they count on, because what happens when you actually punch a bully back? They fold up. This team looks so much like last year. It's amazing to me. Amazing to me. So you can sit there, and here we are coming up on the end of April, and believe everything's going to be just fine. Guys, it is ending the exact same way. There is no getting around that. And I am very comfortable saying that on April 25th. Very comfortable. I absolutely believe this will be a team that will go through stretches that will win 12 out of 14. And they will absolutely be a team that loses 9 out of 10 in some stretches. They are going to be up and down all year. The 12 of 14 are going to outnumber the 9 of 10, primarily because of all the bad teams they play. Do you need numbers to back it up? Because I've got them. Last year, in those 60 games, the Yankees were 23-10 against teams under 500. They were 10-17 against teams over 500. That tells me a lot, and this has been the case going back a couple of years now. Nothing has changed. Unless somehow Corey Kluber can start getting through six innings consistently, unless somehow Jameson Taillon can give you six innings consistently, none of this is changing. And I will put that caveat in there, because if that does change, it completely gives you a whole new dynamic, and you are then relying on a bullpen that is absolutely fantastic to do less for you. But the more that you continue to ask them to do, the less reliable they're going to be. And that's only fair, frankly. That's only fair. As far as hitting is concerned, they are going to be this all year. They're still extremely flawed in how they are constructed. They still have too many of the same player. They just have some of those players who are hitting home runs now. And I'm listening to Aaron Boone last night, and he's talking about how it's good that they won one of these 2-1 games. Well, you had Gerrit Cole on the mound. And I know Shane Bieber was on the other side. But considering what the Yankees lineup is, getting two runs against Shane Bieber, okay, you did enough. And ultimately, that's what matters. But are you going to do enough against good teams? I am not buying it for a minute. They are a paper tiger hiding in pinstripes. That's absolutely what they are. And if you think otherwise, please tell me why all of a sudden this is all going to turn around, or it's in the middle of turning around. And you can point to this week all you want, because we all know what's going to happen. They're going to pound the Orioles, and they're going to pound the Tigers. And we're going to be sitting here after next Sunday with these 8 games, believing, some of you are, that if the Yankees win 7 of those 8, the dynamic is completely changed. And now we're back. Now we're back. Fool's gold, my friends. Fool's gold. This is the same as it ever was. Don't believe otherwise. Don't get fooled. Let's do it. Open lines right now. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. We have so many things to get to today. We have the NFL draft to get to, which is coming up Thursday. Mercifully, it is just about here. We will speak with Jordan Ronan to get the Giants lowdown just 4 days away. We will speak to Rich Cimini to get the Jets lowdown just 4 days away. We will get into these Knickerbockers who have been off the charts great, and so many things to point to that have made it extra special. That as well, and the Mets. If you know who the Mets are, you're a better person than me, because I have no idea what the Mets are after 16 games. Joe in the Bronx will start us off today on the open lines. Joe, what's cooking?
Chris, how you doing, buddy?
Good to hear
from you, man. I'm glad to see you on the airway steady. Listen, the Yankees, you're right. The way they're constructed, but you know who constructed them? Where in sports have you seen a guy have a general manager's job for a better part of 20 years? This guy has got those guys fooled. If the boss was alive, he would have been gone in the drought from 2001 to 2009. Never mind from 9 to 21. This guy, he brought in Cole, I'll give him that, but his moves have been lackluster, man. Lackluster. The boss would have never let Kluber get away, although I wouldn't have paid him that type of money. You know, the Mets feel like they got off the hook not signing
him. Bauer. You mean Bauer. Yeah. Listen, I don't like to go back to the George days because let's call it what it was. It was a long time ago, and it was an incredibly different setup than exists in the majority of Major League Baseball. However, in this instance, Joe, I 100% agree. You don't get 20 years to try to continue to do this. And I understand that they win 90 games every year and they're in the postseason. That's fine. There is a certain level of expectation that's supposed to exist.
It's fine for a lot of organizations.
Right.
It's not fine for the Yankees. It's always winner is a failure. And we know that, you know? But this team...
No, but it's not anymore, Joe. Joe, it's not anymore. That's the problem. They have reset the bar. The bar is now win games, get to the playoffs, we'll see what happens. That's what the bar is.
Yeah, one major move they should have never, ever let go of Didi Gregorius, man. Never let go of that guy. That guy stepped in for Gina, got off to a slow start, and then picked it up. He was a model Yankee. He performed on the field and in the clutch. You could have left Glaber at second. You would have added LeMahieu. They probably wouldn't have added LeMahieu, though.
Well, but you got to remember, Didi. No, but here's what you have to remember. Didi and LeMahieu were here at the same time. They were here together for a year. So let's not forget that. I mean, 2019, LeMahieu was here. Didi was here. Now, Didi was hurt for a lot of 2019, and they wanted to move Torres to short. But I know this for a fact. There were people in the organization that did not believe at the time that Gleyber Torres was a shortstop, that absolutely believed he was a second baseman. And if you want to look at the picture as a whole, that move in and of itself, singularly, may have really screwed up Gleyber Torres across the board. Now, you got to be mentally tougher than that. You have to not get out of shape and show up fat after 2 months off when COVID happens and you're not ready to play. That was a terrible, terrible move on his part, and you have to bust it. And what happened yesterday? What do you know? He busts it, and he actually beats out a hit. Ernest in Brooklyn is next on 98.7 ESPN. Ernesto, what's up, baby?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
Long time fan, first time caller.
Good to have you with us.
I'm tired. Hi, I'm a Mets fan, and I root for the Yankees only because I'm a New York fan. Once my Mets get eliminated, I vote for the Yankees. But you can't keep blaming Cashman. This goes from the top up. What are they, the Bronx Bombers? They don't know how to bunt. They don't know how to steal a base. Tell me anybody knows how to bunt. They don't know how to
bunting just and hit. Stolen bases are not a part of the game anymore. You just have to accept
anymore.
That.
I,
you
I,
have
no,
to
I
accept that.
That. But what I'm saying is, when I watch them, any pitcher knows that all they want to do is hit home runs. And they throw it on the corners, and you see them reaching, Judge, all of them. You see them reaching, trying to hit the ball for a home run. They don't try to get on base.
See, this that's not true either. Hang on. Ernest, I'll give you your time.
All right.
They love getting on base. They just love walking. They love walking or hitting home runs. You are correct. You are correct to say that they are not a good situational hitting team, and they're not a team that is going to lead the league in batting average. And I know that there's not nearly as much of a premium put on that anymore, but there needs to be a premium put on situational hitting, because even other teams that pay attention analytics don't have nine home run hitters in the lineup. They don't.
Right. And then they 100%, I think analytics are really important. They do help, but you still have to go by the manager's gut. Just because analytics said he doesn't go, like in the playoffs, the guy was hot. Why do you pull a player that's hot? That's when you go by your gut. He's still doing good. You let him go until he gets cold.
You know, Ernest.
But he's hot. That's going by the gut.
Yeah, Ernest, thanks for the call. You remind me of something that really irks me, about Brian Cashman and the situation with the manager and such in baseball today. Cashman says that Aaron Boone has the ability to shake up the lineup if he wants to, and he doesn't necessarily have to go with what the numbers say. But following that up, it's, you better be right. Or what? Like, what does that say to your manager? Like, if he tries to go with his gut for one game and he's wrong, does that mean he can't do it again? Does that mean you're going to fire him immediately? The numbers don't always tell the story. The numbers can be wrong. The numbers can say one thing, but they don't take into account what's going on in the clubhouse. They don't take into account what's going on inside of a guy who might be struggling. But you better be right. What a complete crap sentiment that is. Because if you're wrong, well, we can't go back to that ever again. You can't be allowed to make mistakes as a manager of a team. No, no, the dorks in the basement who are filling out that thing based on OPS plus minus 84, whatever it is that they are trying to dig out, those are the guys that know better. I'm sorry. You have to have a little bit more freedom if you're a manager than to have your boss say, well, you can change it up if you want, but you better be right. You better be right. Just freaking fire me right now. Honestly. Just fire me right now. This is so aggravating to me that the only reason you have a manager anymore in all of baseball is to sit there and take hit after hit after hit when things go wrong. You have to be the one facing the media. You have to be the one answering the questions. I actually give Brian credit because on the day off this week, he showed up when things were not going well. And that's because he's always been brilliant in handling the media, and it has always, always worked to his favor. But that's few and far between. The GM isn't answering questions twice a day. And it's only twice a day now because of COVID, really. Like, it used to be even more than that at times. But it's twice a day. The guy who is out there in front of the microphone as the manager of the team is simply paid to take the hits right now. That's it. That's what it feels like. You go out there, we'll tell you what to do with the lineup. We'll tell you who to sub when. You can make a pitching change or two. Better be right. You want to change up the lineup every once in a while? Go ahead. Better be right. Or what? I mean, is Aaron Boone even making $1 million right now? I mean, if he is, it's not much above that. And I know that we can all sit here and say, well, $1 million, tough proposition, right? Hey, the manager of the New York Yankees making that kind of money, we know that's not what it should be. I'm not saying it should be 10 either. But let the manager at least have a little bit more say in what goes on now. You better be right. What complete and utter garbage that is. I mean, Cashman might as well at this point change his name to Steinbrenner. And it's not just about the fact that every move hasn't worked. A lot of moves have. When it's come to pitching in particular, they haven't. When it's come to going and chasing down a superstar when you don't get Shohei Ohtani because you got to do something and you end up taking all of that money and spending it poorly, well, that's on you. That's on you. And I don't understand why the owner doesn't actually care about that, because it's what it feels like. It feels like the owner does not care anymore. It feels like they're concerned about the money. And they do. I'm not calling them cheap, because they do spend $210 million on payroll. There's no getting around that. I absolutely believe that they should be getting more of a return on their money than they are. It's not that they have to go over the salary cap. There used to be a feeling of they have to act like the New York Yankees. Who would do that? Unfortunately, right now, they are acting like the New York Yankees, because this is what they are. They are a team that beats up on bad teams and loses to good ones. And there was a time when that was not acceptable. You can't look at this anymore and just sit there and say, well, we're everybody else. You're supposed to be special. It's the most recognizable franchise in the world in professional sports. Why? Because they win. At least they did. And they are in the biggest market in the world. And you have owners now that are not prioritizing that in the least. Not in the least. To me, that's what's so wrong about what's going on right now. And you can sit there and say, what's the problem? We've won the last few games. We've won 4 out of 5. Here we come. You're going to sit there and you're going to beat up on the Orioles this coming week. You might win today. Might finish off the Indians, pound the Orioles, beat the daylights out of the Tigers. You know why? They both stink. And then when you get back to good teams, you'll lose, because it's what they do. And this is absolutely going to be a season just like last year, where they will have stretches of greatness and they will have stretches of garbage. And the garbage is going to come against the good teams, unless Corey Kluber regains 75% of what he was. Unless Jameson Taillon actually pitches consistently like a third starter. Unless Domingo Germán gives, if Domingo Germán gives you what he gave you the other day, man, you're in great shape. I am not counting on any of those things. Are you?
You're listening to Chris Carlin.
I don't think you could have summed up a case for what a most valuable player is to his team's success than Tom Thibodeau did very subtly yesterday after the Knicks' 9th consecutive win.
You know, it always starts with your best players. And if they work like that, it sets the tone for the team. And so he's relentless. And it's not an accident that he's having the type of season that he's having. His commitment, I can see it from the first day I met him, just looking at the type of conditioning he had and how committed he was to turning this thing around. And so, you know, I can recall back in the 90s when I first arrived here as an assistant, the thing that blew me away was Patrick Ewing was every morning in the offseason, he was the first guy in the building and worked like crazy, got himself ready, and the rest of the team did the same. And, you know, I think that that's leadership. It's not, you know, what you say, it's what you do. And when you see an example like that, it gives you confidence and gives the team confidence.
Exactly. So you're going to now hear the head coach compare Julius Randle's work ethic to that of Patrick Ewing. Man, that says everything. And not only that, the fact that he's referencing, here's the best player who is out there working harder than anybody else. And when you talk about the great players and the great teams over the years, that is always the case. The best players set the tone by working the hardest. And that's what we're seeing right now. Dre in Long Island up next, 98.7 ESPN. Dre, what's going on?
What's going on, man? As a Knicks fan, I would definitely love to play the Knicks because that means we made it to the second round, and I would love to see us play the Knicks and see how we do against them.
Do you visit? Do you view it? Let me ask you this. Do you view it as more of a measuring stick, or do you want to see it from a rivalry standpoint?
There's no rivalry in New York City. This is the Knicks town. But,
exactly.
Yeah, a measuring stick, and I would love to just, you know, slap the Knicks. Absolutely.
So there's a little hint of the rivalry there for you, but more importantly, well, you want to know exactly how good the Knicks actually are.
People that are. I'm sorry, what'd you say, Carl?
I said you, but more importantly, you want to know exactly how good the Knicks actually are when they face a team like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, in a 7-game series, absolutely. And I think also, you know, just the talk that you heard in the beginning when they got, you know, Durant and Kyrie and then Harden, so yeah, I would love to play them, and I would, you know, I want the Knicks to be competitive against them. I mean, if they have all three of those guys in there, that's a hard matchup, right? But I think our defense would give them, you know, give them a run. So
I think they'd give them a run if they had two of them. And thanks for the call, Dre. I don't think that it would be a great series at all if they had all three and they were cooking. The biggest issue the Nets are going to have is defensively. What are they going to do on the defensive end if teams actually do have enough answers for them? Like, they can't, they have nobody who can legitimately guard Joel Embiid. They've got fouls to give, but that's it. And Embiid makes his foul shots. So that's not going to work in that instance. They have nobody who can match up with him at all. Lisa is in Yonkers. She's next, 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Lisa, what's going on?
Hi. I would like to know, I love your show, by the way.
Thank you.
I would like to know what's going on with Kevin Knox. Why won't they play him, and what's his deal?
I think I can sum it up pretty succinctly. He stinks. How about that? He's
well,
not very good.
He
defensively, obviously, does not get on the floor when he's not doing what he has to do defensively. Thibodeau's not going to put up with that in the least, especially when you have not gotten better for your career at doing what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be a really good shooter, and he has not gotten better at that. He has not proven to be somebody that is truly helpful enough offensively to justify being out there. And when you're not doing that, you better sure well be doing what you're supposed to do on the defensive end. Oh, Lisa's gone already. Okay. She hung up. But that's why. Let me put it another way. Kevin Knox, not good at basketball. Just going to throw that out there. 800-919-3776. More of the Randle MVP talk. It's legit, like you just heard from Thibodeau. I'm telling you, over the next couple of weeks, this is going to become a more of a discussion.
You're listening to Chris Carlin.
Let's hit Kevin in Midwood. Kevin is next on 98.7 ESPN. Kevin, how are you?
Yo, what's up? Chris Carlin, man. Media darling.
How you doing?
Check this out, bro. good, man. I'm good. Yo, second time caller. I never call sports shows, man, but listening to your conversation, man, you intrigued me to call and get my takes on certain things. You're 100% right about Randall and Thibodeau. Randall's MVP, Thibodeau's Coach of the Year. Now, they talked about what's the guy in Phoenix? What's the coach?
Who, Devin Booker?
The coach?
The coach or the The coach is Monty Williams.
The coach. Monty Williams.
Okay.
How was he? They talked about him being the coach of the year. You got Chris Paul. You know what I'm saying?
You got another coach on the staff. Right on the floor.
They had nothing. You know what I'm saying? Thibodeau has done a phenomenal job with his team. They are over exceeding. And like Giannis has been doing the same thing that he's been doing. I mean, he's a good player, but you see what happens when the playoffs come around. So you know what you're getting there. He's not doing nothing that he's been doing. He's a phenomenal specimen athletically, so he's going to do that. But when it comes down to it, the Knicks are doing something without any new acquisitions or far exceeding anything that their talent and their ability wants them to be achieving. And I also want to make one more point. I know I don't have a lot of time.
Go ahead.
Like you had mentioned, like the bunt and the steal is not part of the game.
No, it's not.
I think that's taking away your weapons. If you're a soldier and you got a AK when you're in open field battle, and then when you go into a closed room, you pull out the little smaller weapon. It's more effective.
So, yeah, listen, Kevin, I don't know that I want to make that comparison, but thanks for the call. I would say, though, that you're not wrong to say it is taking away other ways of winning. And here's what bothers me about it the most, okay? When you have people talking about the idea of analytics and how important they are, when it first came around, outs were treated as currency. We only have 27 of them per game, so we have to use them wisely. That was a big part of analytics. So if that was the case, why do strikeouts mean nothing now? Like that, we have shifted away from that mentality. I would, at the very least, and granted, Aaron Judge is not going out there and going to bunt, but you get the point. Other guys who do strike out, not just the Yankees, but anywhere, the fact that it's not part of it, especially, like I've been shocked to see, it has happened all the time, but the amount of times these games have gone to extra innings and you have the bottom part of your lineup up and a runner on second already and you're not bunting them over. That has happened numerous times, and I cannot get over that. That's absolutely absurd. Lonnie is on Long Island, and he is next. Now, Lonnie, what's going on, bud?
Hey, Chris, my guy. How are you, buddy?
I'm outstanding, Lonnie. You?
Good. I'm doing pretty good. Yes, I got to give my props to the Knicks. Coach Stitt's got them playing. He's got them playing on a high I've never seen. And it's been a long time. Going back to the Stars' human days. But anyway, the Knicks could be tough if they get that dominant point guard. But then again, all these guys are playing, you know, without a point guard, and they're doing well.
Well, let's not be too crazy about this. Lonnie, let's not be too crazy about this, because we do have to acknowledge that while this team might be a little bit better talent-wise than we think, it's still very much short of what they would need to win a championship. And that's at least one superstar to go along with a developing Barrett and a Julius Randle, who would be best served as a number two to a star on this team.
Yes. And can I get one more thing about my Jets?
Yeah.
My Jets, I'm just praying the Jets to pick the right guy this time. I mean, come on. We got to get the right guys. They have to have a great draft to turn this team around.
Well, Lonnie, thanks for the call. And here's what's important, right? Everybody's talking about how Zach Wilson is the Jets' biggest key for Joe Douglas, and this is ultimately going to determine his position long-term with the franchise. Listen, that's accurate to a degree. What is more accurate? You know, Sam Darnold did not do in Mike Maccagnan. Other things did. Other draft picks that hadn't hit really did him in. So when you have this many picks, you have to get a lot of them to hit so that you're getting better. We could talk about all the currency you have, but if you spend it in bad places, it doesn't help you. It hurts you. Cliff in Jersey, next, 98.7 ESPN. Cliff, what's going on?
Hey, Chris. Love the show. First time caller.
Thanks, Cliff. How you got? What do you got, bud?
I've got the best way to describe the Knicks is they're playing like a family. They're looking after each other on the offensive side and the defensive side of the court to get the win. And just for that fact, the Knicks have reached in the playoffs. There's no doubt Julius Randle should be in the MVP discussion.
I don't understand why he hasn't started to rise up more in it, but I think you're going to see a lot more chatter about it if the Knicks continue to play well. I don't expect them to keep going at this level, obviously, especially when they have this road trip coming up. But I do think if the Knicks are in a position where they're going to get to 40 or 41 wins, which is not out of the question when you're already at 34 and you got 11 games left, then there will be more talk about it because it will be a topic. And I think that voters will give it a second look, as they should. All right, good talk. We'll see you out there. Terrence in the Bronx is next. Terrence, what's going on, dude? How are you?
Hey, buddy, great, man. I love your show. I tune in all the time.
Thank you very much, Terrence.
I want to say that you've been writing so many different things today. Randall, this is a good year for Randall to possibly be MVP. LeBron, AD, those guys are injured. KD, Harden, Kyrie, those guys are injured. The only competition I would say between Randall and MVP, if the Knicks can get in maybe a third seed, then I think that Randall has a good shot. But Chris Paul, you know, it's between both of them, to me, honestly. It's, you know, between MVP, like, or Joel Embiid, he's probably like the hot one right now.
No, listen, but, if you had to bet on who was going to win it, Joel Embiid is probably the betting favorite. I'll go look it up on FanDuel, see if I can find it. Joel Embiid is probably the betting favorite right now. I'm sorry, say that again, guys. Jokic, I'm sorry, I forgot. Jokic would be the betting favorite. He's right there. Embiid's not far behind him. I know people have this thought about Chris Paul, and I get it. The problem is the other players that Chris Paul has, and he's made them better, and he has taken Phoenix to a whole nother level with his leadership, but I don't think Chris Paul will win it.
And one more thing I'd like to add is one of the callers mentioned, actually you mentioned about Knox. Imagine if the Knicks, like let's say like, okay, Golden State had those three first-round picks. They had Steph, Clay, and a Draymond. Imagine if the Knicks hit with Knox, Frank Ntilikina, and Obi. Imagine where they would be. You know, we have three. Knox and Frank. I mean, those guys. I mean, like get first round picks. Those guys have to hit. And Obi, I know he was hurt, but I just feel like I don't see a star there. I see a guy who's a hard worker. I don't necessarily see a guy who's going to be a star. So if we had those three like first round picks that day, we'd be in a much better place right now.
Yeah, listen, I get it. I get it. But it's hard to argue that they wouldn't be in a better place. So I went to look it up. Jokic is minus 380 on FanDuel. Then Embiid at plus 350, which is actually a pretty good bet. Julius Randle is right now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, the ninth choice. The ninth choice at plus 12,000. Wow.
You're listening to Chris Carlin.
Lots of Jets talk right now with the draft 4 days away at 800-919-3776. Eddie in Rockland has been patient. Eddie, how we doing, brother?
Hey, Big Chris. This is what I want done. I want the Jets to do a big snow job. They're just talking about Wilson. What they're going to do is they're going to trade with San Francisco. Because San Francisco, if they love that whatever that other guy
is. Justin Fields or Mac Jones? Wilson.
Mac Jones, I mean, sorry about that. And then you swap picks, and you get San Francisco second this year and next year, and then you get Woody Johnson on the Jet, and you go pick up Justin Fields, and you pick up one of the two running backs, the Clemson or the Alabama kid. Then you pick up the Penn State tight end,
Then you pick up the offensive guard that you said, and then the center, like you said. And you all had, and Woody's driving that plane with all five of them on there, with all their jet jerseys on, with a picture, a couple of hours after the draft is over. And you land those five guys on into Floral Park, I'll be a Jet fan. I'll drop the Giants in 2 seconds and get Jet season tickets.
You'll drop the Giants and become a Jet season ticket holder.
Oh, for what the Giants have done since John Mara's
since
taken
winning
over?
Two Super Bowls in 5 years, a couple of years ago, not that long ago. You'll drop them. Bail out. Adios. Eddie, that's the more alarming part of your phone call. First of all, if you're trying to convince the 49ers that you're taking Mac Jones, I think the 49ers will be more than happy to say, go ahead. We're good if you want to leave Wilson on the board. We'll be fine. Don't sweat it. Now, none of that is all happening, okay? If you got the guard at 23, that'd be great. Boy, I mean, the thought of trading back up and giving up a second rounder next year. You know, there aren't as many wide receivers this year as there were last year, but there's still a lot. And Waddle is an incredible talent. But, man, I don't know. Ira in Staten Island. Ira, what's up, brother? 4 days away, Ira.
Hey, what's happening? Hey, yeah, can't wait, Chris, can't wait. And, you know, that last call, you know, all due respect to Eddie, a Giant fan calling, switching over to be a Jet fan, I don't buy it for a second. But, you know, I get Rich's point, a dynamic receiver, and I fully understand that. But, you know, I'm sorry, man. If Slater or Pearsall are at that 10 or 11 mark and Douglas wants to trade up, that's the only package that I would go up to get is to get your tackle to play opposite Becton. You could get a receiver in later rounds. I'm not doing that because let's look at it. If you don't have time to throw the ball, what is the receiver going to do here? So you're investing this number two pick in a quarterback that hopefully is going to be here for at least 10 years. Don't do what the Colts did and got Andrew Luck beat up and knocked out of the game. You want to build around Zach Wilson. You got to protect
him. I agree. I agree, Ira. I don't know that they want to draft two tackles in the first round in successive years. If you want to go, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Look what Tannenbaum did. He got a center and a tackle in the first round with Brick and Mangold.
I mean, Brick was a really high pick. Mangold was down the bottom of the first round. Like, you're talking about moving all the way back up to 10. And I'm fine if the Jets want to take Vera Tucker at 23 if he were there, or they want to move up a few spots to get him. I'm not against that. I'm talking about two tackle spots where eventually they're both going to be making a ton of money. I don't know if I'm going to do that.
I get that. To that point, yeah,
I'm not saying you need a bad player at right tackle. I'm just saying I don't know that you want to spend a first-round pick again on a tackle. I would absolutely agree with the notion, though, of protecting your quarterback.
Yeah, you have to. And you know what makes it so frustrating is, now listen, Douglas has 10 picks, and you know all the open spots. They don't even have a third starting linebacker right now. You know, they don't have really a quality cornerback right now. They don't have a nickelback really on the roster because I don't consider a starting nickel. So, you know, he's just got so many needs. I don't think he could address everything. Even with all the picks, I don't think with the quality he could address everything in one draft. So I would give Salah a couple of shiny defensive toys, but for the most part, I got to focus on building around Zach Wilson, skill position players, and protecting them in this year's draft.
Thanks, Ira. Appreciate it. And look, I don't have a problem with that at all. If you want to protect the quarterback for the long term, absolutely. We just saw what happened when you don't do that. We just saw that up close and personal. So obviously, that has to be a priority. Anthony, in the car, next, 98.7 ESPN. Anthony.
What's up? What's up, Chris?
How are you, bud?
I'm good. All right, so I wanted to get your opinion. Now that the and I know you're talking Jets and Giants, I'm sorry, but
That's
I wanted
okay.
to get your opinion. now that they have two first-round draft picks after getting rid of Brown, do they do something sexy with those picks? I mean, this kid needs a big-time receiver so bad. I know they have holes in other places. I know they need an edge rusher. I know they need some linemen, but this kid needs a wide receiver so bad. I wanted to get your opinion on it. Thanks.
Well, first of all, I hated the trade. And the only reason was not because they traded him, because we know they needed to. It's where they traded him. I would not trade him to the team that is keeping you from getting to the Super Bowl and making them better. I would not do that. So that's number one. Number two, yeah, they do. Hollywood Brown has been okay, but he hasn't been what they needed him to be. And they have a terrific tight end in Mark Andrews. But yes, they do need a big-time wide receiver. So if you want to trade 27 and 31 all the way up to try to get, you know, I'd have to look at the chart to see where that would get you. I would understand that. But I would think that there would still be enough depth at the wide receiver position where you wouldn't necessarily have to do that. Let's see if I can pull up that value chart real quick. I thought I had it, but I don't. Here we go. So 27 and 31. 27 is worth 680 points, 30 points. So that's 1280. So if you gave up the two of them, in theory, that could get you to 11 or 10. The Giants or the Cowboys. The Cowboys pick is worth, is that right? 1280, yeah. Cowboys pick is theoretically worth 1,300 points. If they still value that that chart and the picks the same way as they used to. This is basically what it looks like it's going to be for this year.
You're listening to Chris Carlin.